you found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. Start your workday off right with the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show, heard here weekday mornings at latalkradio.com, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, and then later for download or listening on demand. Also on iTunes, MariaSanchezShow.com and LATalkRadio.com. So thank you so much for joining us live. We have appreciated the opportunity. Our guest, first guest this morning is Erin J. Morgan. She's going to talk with us about how Facebook has changed dating and relationships. She's a supermodel and an actress, a member of Mensa. She is the reigning Ms. United Nations 2013. She's fluent in four languages and a social media advisor for a Fortune 500 company. And we also have our pet correspondent visiting with us later on in the program, Nina Rubin. She is an advocate for four-legged and, you know, anything that has to do furry friends in our home. She's going to be speaking with us about the use of marijuana in treating dogs and their illnesses. So that should prove stimulating and interesting as always. She started out having five dogs. That was the limit, and all of them rescues. And so I don't know where they're at now currently, but I know that they have rescued puppies that were siblings, and that was the latest. So we'll catch up with her about that. Had the opportunity and the pleasure to see the musical Legally Blonde, which was opening night Friday night. I had not seen the movies, and I didn't know what I was going to think of it because of that. And it was, of course, what put Reese Witherspoon really into the superstar status as far as the feature films go. But the musical was absolutely fabulous. And that's coming from somebody who hadn't seen the movies. So I would imagine if you've seen the movies that you'd thoroughly enjoy it. And not only was it terrific, the cast is fantastic. They are very talented. Most of them local. They hold auditions, Cabrillo Music Theater does, at the Civics Arts Plaza in Thousand Oaks. So if you're in Southern California, you know what I'm talking about. If you're not, pay attention when it comes to your area, and I strongly recommend that you go. It was really, really a great, great time. And we had the pleasure of interviewing the director a week ago Monday. So if you didn't get a chance to hear that, I'd like to suggest that you download that interview, because Tiffany did a great job with describing what the experience would be like, and she was right on the money. So it was really great, a wonderful way to spend the evening. And I guess last week I got my dose of theater in, because we saw Spank on opening night Tuesday, and then we saw Legally Blonde on Friday. So I love the theater anyway, and I love musical theater, but I love all theater. So it kind of got me my fix in for my cravings in that regard. And speaking of theater, I am so sad that it's been like 8 years since I've been to New York, and that's a long, long gap. Last time I was there, I was with my four children, and every time I go to New York, I usually see a play a day, sometimes two. So I'll see a matinee, and then I'll see one that evening. And one of the times that I went, I had just my youngest two with me. The older two were in high school at the time and in football season, so they couldn't take the time away. And not only did they see one a day with me, sometimes they saw two a day with me. So that was really something. And I started my master's program in theater arts with an emphasis on script writing. So I'm always just enraptured and in awe on folks that can actually make it happen, taking an idea, putting pen to paper, getting characters, and then having it have its legs where they're actually doing what it is that you said that they should do is just amazing to me. So we have some great news in the stories this morning. This morning, in a city just north of Tokyo, a 32-ton train fell, and a woman got caught in an 8-inch gap between the train and the platform during, you can imagine how busy the rush hour was this morning. So what happened? About 40 people joined train officials and pushed the train car, which suspension system allows it to lean on either side, and the woman was rescued. She's unnamed. She's in her 30s. She was pulled out uninjured to applause from onlookers. And after just an 8-minute delay, the train went on its way. So I call this mob mentality at its best. And having visited Tokyo, if you have been on the trains, you might understand it's a mass and mob of humanity. It's unbelievably crowded and packed and organized. And so you get on these trains and they have train cops that stand on the platforms, and their job is to push as many people as possible into each car before the doors close and it takes off. So I happened to get on a train. I was with fellow Rotarians. We were on our way to India to participate in the National Immunization Days for polio eradication. And we made two stops along the way. We stopped in Tokyo, and then we stopped in Bangkok on our way to India. So I'm with my fellow Rotarians, there were four of us total, and we get onto this train, and we're headed towards the world's largest fish market in Tokyo. And it opens, they have the auctions at about 4 in the morning, and then the fish market itself is open to the public around 6 in the morning. So we were headed there, and that was before we were going to take a tour of Tokyo later that day at about 9 o'clock. I think the bus picked us up from our hotel. So quite an ambitious morning. So we get onto the train, and it wasn't full, and I have my back to the side of the train, a subway, if you will, opposite where the doors open to let in the public. And so at the next stop, more people come in, and then at the next stop, more people come in, and then at the next stop, they push, like, so I'm facing them as they're coming, right? We're nearly nose to nose, and we knew to expect this, because I think otherwise, I would have thought that there was something wrong, that they push so that you get the maximum amount of humans on the car, and then the door closes and off it goes. It was quite the sight. The other thing that was kind of off-putting is a fair amount of folks in Tokyo wear the masks over their faces, and almost like a surgical mask for a physician in the surgery room. So to see them walking up and down the streets and in the trains and the buses and everything was a little bit disconcerting, but I understand with that amount of humanity. The other thing that surprised me about the people in Tokyo, the four of us, okay, we're Caucasian, we're looking at the boards trying to figure out what platform we go to get what train to get to the fish market, and numerous Japanese people came up and asked in English, how may I help you? What do you need? What are you looking for? And I was like, wow. After a while, I thought, these must be Chamber of Commerce shills. Because to a one, another time we were in this district that's really famous for its nightlife, and we took a cab there, and we didn't quite really know where we were going, so we're kind of wandering around. We're kind of looking around. You know, we look probably like we're a little bit lost, and this young man, you know, I was going to say he's probably in his 20s, comes up and says in an Australian accent, may I help you? And I look at him, and he's, you know, looks Japanese completely, and I was like, oh, well, we're trying to go here. And he goes, you know, it's right there, but I'm headed in that general direction. I've got a few minutes, so I'm going to walk you guys there, in his Australian accent, which I can't do. And I say to him, how is it that you have an Australian accent? He said, I went to Australia. That's where I learned how to speak English. I was like, okay, that makes sense. So, and another piece of good news, a Norwegian woman who's 24 years old, who had been sentenced to 16 months in prison in Dubai for having extramarital sex because she was raped by a coworker, has been pardoned and allowed to fly home after her conviction. She had been sentenced to 16 months. So this was this morning. She's free on appeal with her next court hearing scheduled for early September. And she had been staying at a Norwegian-linked aid center. She says she's planning to leave the United Arab Emirates soon, but first I have to thank some very special people, including local groups that supported her. She went public with this. The AP says it normally doesn't identify the names of alleged sexual assault victims, but she went public voluntarily to talk to the media. She was charged with having sex outside of marriage after she went to the police. And when she went to report the rape, she said, I want to call the police. And they said, are you sure you want to call the police? And she was like, yes. And that's when she got caught in this system. And they say it's showing the clash between Dubai's Western friendly image and its Islamic based legal codes. So, folks in the know were communicating on Twitter about this. In Norway, the foreign minister posted a Twitter message, Marte's release, thanks to everyone who signed up to help. And then Norway's prime minister wrote on Twitter, happy that Marte has been pardoned and that she is a free woman again. So here's an interesting study about satisfaction. If you're middle-aged and miserable, don't despair. Give it a decade or two. You'll feel like a carefree person again. Research has revealed that life satisfaction peaks at 23. That's nice to know, but also at 69. So they say that when we're in our 20s, we overestimate our future opportunities. And by the time our satisfaction levels are at their lowest in our mid-50s, and then they start to rise again after 55 and peak once more at the age of 69. This is according to a study by the Center for Economic Performance at the London School of Economics. The paper is going to be published this week. It's the first to examine how our expectations compare to reality at different life stages. So people in their 50s could learn from the elderly who generally feel less regret. They should try not to be frustrated by their unmet expectations because they are probably not feeling much worse than their peers. So that midlife crisis thing seems to be going with this study. We've got other news, but we're going to get Aaron Morgert on the line now to talk about Facebook and how it may or may not have changed the way we look at our social lives. Social media guru Aaron Morgert.
The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation, on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning, this is Aaron.
Aaron, good morning. You're on the Maria Sanchez Show live. Thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us this morning.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Quite the accomplishments you have in your life. First as the reigning Ms. United Nations, but to me more important is the member of Mensa, which I love, that you got beauty and brains, and voted in the top 10 fitness trainers by Fit TV. Fluent in four languages, and here we are talking about Facebook in our social lives. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you.
I haven't heard about Facebook and social lives except for people who have gotten in touch with former boyfriends or girlfriends out of curiosity. So is that how Facebook has changed dating and relationships?
Well, I'm married myself, and I know that many of my friends, there are several people who have reached out throughout the last few years who have utilized Facebook as a tool to reach out to others and actually find people that they either used to know in college, high school, and either have rekindled those relationships, or there are people that I know now who are actually having relationships through Facebook, which is to me strange, not real, very, you know, idiotic in a sense, because it's not real. And a lot of times many people actually get hurt because they may have not even met the person in real life. And it's very, you have to be extremely cautious with these situations. I really don't recommend it, but people are doing it. Yes, they are turning to social media to fulfill their love life and their relationships. Indeed, yes.
And what's interesting about Facebook, because since it's not a dating site per se, to me, anytime somebody has tried to do that, I've just like, no, I'm not, that's not why I'm here. It's different if you're on an internet dating site, then you know that that's the reason that you're there. And the only time that I actually did respond to a guy on Facebook who approached me socially, this is about 3 years ago, it ended up that he wanted money.
Interesting. Well, yeah. I mean, those things happen too. Facebook is one of those neutral programs. I think that anything goes. I've been approached for money, jobs, you name it. I mean, it's an open field, and it's really kind of it's not moderated. It's just all out there. I mean, LinkedIn, at least, as a social media, it's more business-like. You're there for a business purpose. It's not or anything of that nature. So it definitely is something to be thinking about when you're dealing with different social media sites. So,
and is there a ethics or code or rules that you think you should abide by?
I basically think that when you're dealing with any of the sites, you actually should be careful with who, not only who you're dealing with, but which site you are on. And of course, is one of those very random sites. You just have to be careful of the security precautions and be careful of who you are actually talking with. And again, LinkedIn to me is more repeatable. It's been around longer. It's a business network. It's one of those things where, I mean, a lot of the military is on there. So there are groups that are on there that are repeatable that you know. They aren't on there, and their profiles are not fake per se. Although that is happening a little bit more on LinkedIn. With Facebook, it's unfortunately, it's anything goes. You know, they are now coming out with a certification process with Facebook. And much like Twitter, and they are randomly picking people. That just happened within the last month and a half. And they're just picking people to give them that special certification code to verify that they are a real person indeed. And but again, it's going to take a long time with Facebook. I mean, their security measures, their department, who handles hacking and all of that, they are about 5 years behind in backlogging with cases of people who have had their profiles hacked. So they are really inundated with a lot of security measures that are beyond their control. It's really way out of control. So I would beware on Facebook. I would just use it as friends and family only, networking, and that's it. And just really be extremely cautious with using that tool. And another thing, too, Facebook is one of those things that all countries are using it. So make sure you change your password frequently. Watch out for fake profiles. They're all out there. I mean, it's becoming very much of a problem indeed. So,
Just last week, there was something that they had changed again, their settings, and so that if you didn't go in and click undo with your pictures and your friends, that then everybody had the ability to see whether they were a friend or not. In other words, the onus is on the user, not on the outsiders.
Yes, yes. That's happened as well. Yes, indeed. As a security feature. That has happened to me, in fact. And they're trying to utilize many different security measures to make sure that you're indeed who you are, and it's still not good enough. It still needs to be tackled down to a science. And there are just so many people that are actually trying to use Facebook. And again, there are people who are on there who have 15, 16, 17 profiles.
Really?
Yes.
With different pictures, claiming that almost like an avatar?
Some are different pictures. Some are the same picture. Believe it or not, they use the same picture. It's incredible that they actually do this, but they are on there just trying to, for whatever reason, you know, just either create a personality or create maybe I don't know a with, you know, the catfish syndrome. They're trying to pull in people into their world. So yes, I've seen profiles, and it's the same thing on Twitter. I've seen the same people on Facebook who've had numerous profiles also on Twitter. And you really, you know, a lot of us who are using these social profiles are keeping each other very aware of these things, because a lot of times these people are actually hackers. They are people who go after other people who are honest and really are trying to network and do things the correct way, and these other individuals simply are after you or groups and are trying to hack your account. So it's out there. And yeah. And some of those, in fact, are even leaked into LinkedIn. A couple of them are. So
now, if you see that, is there a way to report it?
Oh, there's a way to report it. I mean, excuse me, I'm sorry, I have a cold. There is a way to report it through Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. You can report it to Facebook, but again, that will go in a file, which I call the great vacuum in the sky, and it really, it won't be attended to, I don't think, you know, for years. Twitter, it's the same way, in my opinion. I'm actually trying to find out a little bit more information from both companies to see why the backlog, what is happening with these things, because some people are actually trying to create legitimate, you know, businesses and profiles, and it's becoming a huge problem with having a name and a presence on any of the social media sites, and then if they get hacked, it's really frustrating, because they report and then nothing is done about it. It just sits there. So,
and I find it amazing that these people have the acumen and the technical skills to do that. And why wouldn't they just do something that would help the world or help society, help, you know, a cause? I mean, because they're obviously bright and they've got good technical skills. In fact, with my Gmail, I can't tell you how many in my inbox about, you know, phishing, or that I've won this, or my Nairobi, whatever.
Oh, my goodness,
Sometimes I'll send a reply and say, please stop scamming the public and take me off your mailing list. It's like, really? Come on. It's over 10 years old, that ruse. But it must work, or else they wouldn't keep at it, is my guessing.
I think that... They're trying to find that one individual that it's going to work with, and they're finding ways. Hackers are finding ways to get around, and what they're trying to do, I believe, is use younger children and use a lot of loopholes and a lot of manpower to get these messages, letters, scams out there to different people. And even on Facebook, I get a lot of really strange requests for money, you know, and they have to do with Yahoo. And I block the individuals. Anything like that, I block them. I don't even respond. I block immediately, because
that's probably better, not to engage them.
I never do. I block them, because I assume that whoever is sending that, whoever their source is, if I don't respond, someone else from that group is going to try and then respond in kind. So I just block them immediately. So
I did hear a man that I know knew a gal that got duped, and she did send money, and she did send plane tickets and all this stuff, and she was standing at the airport with roses because he was going to marry her, and of course he never arrived, and she actually hired a private eye and found out that it was a married couple somewhere in Africa, I believe, that's what they do. They just scam. And I think they spent 800 hours on telephone conversations, but 5,000 here and 400 there and et cetera. And it added up. And it's, I mean, I can't believe that somebody would be that dumb or desperate, but still it, so that just goes to show you that there's somebody who did it. The
oh,
fishing worked.
Goodness.
I know.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, really.
It's horrible. And I think, well, I mean, in this day and age, I think people are desperate for emotional contact. They're desperate for relationships. And a lot of times they are lonely and they're looking for that perfect someone. And they believe that they have found that. And you know, they are really actually, they're in a desperate situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our society now. I think,
yeah.
You know, the church that I attend, he mentioned that one of the churches that he founded, he was a missionary, and he said that one of the churches overseas that he founded, 60% of his congregation is single. 60%. That's huge. It's a huge church over in Budapest. I mean, it tells me that, you know, either they're divorced and they're looking for another person, or probably, or, you know, they've never been married, which is doubtful. People are the whole nuclear family, the whole marriage situation has fallen apart. So people are looking for answers, intimacy, relationship, love, and they're looking for it in these social media situations. And I'm telling you, people are getting hurt right and left.
Yeah, because they're probably the most vulnerable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just, it is not the place to find it. It is not. It just absolutely is not.
So do you mind telling us what the Ms. United Nations process was like and what that has been for you this year?
Oh, not at all. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I have a bad chest cold, which happened literally within the last 1.5 days. So, I'm not choking up over the experience. So it's so emotional. I can't talk about it. Oh gosh. Oh, no. The whole process was very wonderful because, it really is it's a pageant. Actually, it is partially owned by Donald Trump, and it's all part of the whole Miss U.S. and all those pageants are interrelated, and this one happens to be more of a global pageant, and it really is smaller, but I liked it because it gave you the ability to focus more on your not only interpersonal skills, but your ability to communicate with others, maybe in another language, and deal with people on a global scale. And so when I entered it, there's an application process, certainly there's an interview process, and they want to pick someone who's going to represent the country best and be photogenic and all those other things, you know. And so that was basically the interview process. And that entailed how I became Miss Mrs. U.S. 2012 and 2013. So
So you represented the United States in the Miss United Nations competition.
Absolutely, yes.
And then the Miss United Nations competition was representatives from all over the world, obviously. Did they have a talent part too?
They do not have a talent part. They base, I believe, 40% of it is on the interview process because they want you to be able to communicate, and you're judged by your ability to communicate with the judges and other people and be able to be adept at responding to other questions regarding, oh my goodness, my voice is going, I'm so sorry.
It's okay, and you're a sport to and I may I recommend Throat Coat, the tea? That's what us
radio people. Yes. Yes.
We
yes,
like that.
Absolutely. But it actually you are given the ability to showcase your talents and your ability to work with other countries, and you have to be aware of not only the social situations that are being engaged in those countries, but what the customs are and definitely what the protocols are in those other countries. So you can't go in blindly not knowing what the customs are in Iran, for example, or Finland or any of those other countries. So
so that was part of the interaction, was talking about the status quo for other countries or what their social issues are?
Absolutely, yes, yes.
Wow.
Yes, yes. You have to know those things, yes.
How is it that you speak four languages?
You know, I grew up a very precocious child. I actually tried to teach myself Spanish when I was in the first grade, and I started to read at a very early age. And I took French. I studied French for 8 years all throughout high school and college. From there, I then learned Italian. We were stationed in Italy for 3 years, and I didn't even open up a book because I knew that the language was very similar in its written context. And so basically by immersion, I learned Italian within about 3 months.
Wow.
And well, it's just immersion really forces you to really use your brain in a way that you're just forced to really rethink the other languages that you know. And I got to the point where I was actually dreaming in Italian. That's the point that I had got to. And so that I really became very, you know, very well spoken with. And the Latin, I also have two children, and I homeschooled them for many years. And Latin actually is of course, the root for all of the Romance languages. So that mm-hmm. became a very natural thing for me to teach. And so that I knew and taught to them for 5 years. And, excuse me, plus it's a medical language, too. And I have a minor in biology, so a lot of it, it was very, very natural for me to use it to teach them. So, of course, everyone calls it a dead language, and no, people usually don't walk around speaking Latin. They certainly don't, but it's really cool to impress people when you can speak it. but it's helpful for the medical community. I mean,
it's funny because one of my best friends in college wanted to go to medical school, and he ended up changing his major to Latin with a chemistry minor, and he did get into medical school, and he's been practicing for decades now. But we thought, what a novel approach, because obviously what you're saying is true, but I also think it made him look fairly unique in the application process.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, very few people would ever change their major to Latin. I mean, that's a rarity in itself. So that's impressive. That's, yes, tell him that was a good move. Awesome, awesome move. I am impressed. And even with my children, aside from the languages, they know, both of my children, they went through the Stanford gifted program for several years online because we were stationed in Hawaii. And I noticed that on Stanford's website that they only offered two languages. And, of course, they were either Latin or Mandarin Chinese. And I thought, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
So we hired a Mandarin Chinese tutor. He was from Beijing. And he worked with my two children and three other children in our neighborhood. And he was outstanding. And I can't tell you how difficult that language was. It was, even I, who love languages, to me it's like a Rubik's Cube. It's like a puzzle. It's fun. I enjoy it. I enjoy the game, the whole how to, you know, I'm one of those people, I started out as an English lit major in college. I love dissecting sentences. I like figuring out where words go. That's just me. So learning other languages to me is like, it's fun. And but the Mandarin Chinese is an entirely different animal. The calligraphy, the letters, all of that is just so, so beyond different. So, but they took that for 3 years. So they weren't really happy about it at first, but I said, this will look really good. Trust me, later.
Yes. Yeah, my son's just had one of their buddies over yesterday, and he's bilingual in Mandarin because his parents were born there. He was born here in the United States, and he goes back and forth because their business is also in China. And I'm like, you are so lucky, and because his English is flawless because he grew up in America. But yes, the fact that he has that in his arsenal, it's like, ah, you're so fortunate.
Absolutely. I mean, most business people, they will say, if you have that under your belt, I mean, it's like a golden ticket. If you say, I speak Mandarin Chinese fluently, good. Here's your plane ticket. You can work for us now. Go to Nokia. Go to, I don't care mm-hmm. where. Because it's the truth. So.
Well, Aaron, I know you've got, when we post the podcast later today, we'll put your website, aaronmorgert.com. Is there anything that you wanted to promote too?
Yes, I would. Well, actually, my website is aaronjmorgert.com. And no, I don't normally have this low of a voice. I am a female, not a male, really. And I had someone call me yesterday, and they said, may I please speak to Aaron Morgert? I said, that's me. It's Aaron. And I got a kick out of that. Along with that, there are, since I'm out here in California now, there are a few projects that I'm working on some reality shows, mm-hmm. and I'd also like to promote not only those ideas, but also my publicist. I wanted to give him a huge shout out because he's doing such a wonderful job. His name is Shannon Rose. He's with Eclectic Media. Definitely, you know, I want to promote him and my manager, Robert Tranchina, through Tranchina Management. He's absolutely phenomenal at what he does too, and they're wonderful projects coming up that some that I can't talk about. But the other thing too is I am working with a studio called Fireborn Studios, which is in Los Angeles, and I'm a co-producer with them, and we have projects coming up there too. So
good.
It's, things are happening. Things are busy. And
good, Aaron. Great. I love beauty and brains. Brains and beauty better.
Well, thank you. You sound beautiful and brainy as well, and I love that too. Definitely.
Thank you. Thank you, Aaron. Yeah. I really appreciate your time. Continued success, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you. And, one more thing too. Yes. If you can, on Twitter, give me a shout out, and you know, I love to follow up on the social medias and promote you and other people, other shows that I'm on. So just, yeah, I'm also at Aaron J. Morgert, so just give me a shout out and I'll do the same. So
okay.
I love to do that too.
So. Perfect. Thank you
so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Aaron J. Morgert, M-O-R-G-A-R-T, member of Mensa, reigning Ms. United Nations 2013, certified personal trainer, Ms. Galaxy, Virginia, speaks English, French, Italian, Latin. I would say she has it all. We're going to segue right now to our pet correspondent, Nina Rubin. She's going to be speaking with us about something that's been happening in the medical field with dogs and marijuana.
Hello.
Nina, it's Maria Sanchez. You're on the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Maria. How are you?
I'm terrific. How about yourself?
Very good, thanks.
Good. I was trying to remember how many poochies you have now, because I know you adopted the siblings recently. You have three now, dogs?
Yes, we have three. Well, we have Lucy, who is our last dog that came with us from New York. She's the last left of the four that came from the East Coast and traveled cross-country with us. And we have the two new puppies.
And how are the puppies doing?
The puppies are doing wonderful. They're
are
well
they?
On the way to become they're well on their way to becoming good canine citizens.
Contributing members to the Rubin household.
Exactly. Well, they finished their classes, and now it's just up to us to continue their work so that they maintain their good behavior.
Now, did you foster them initially and then adopt them?
Yes, I did foster them initially because I wanted to see how we felt about having, you know, at that point we had five in the house. And I wanted to make sure that taking on puppies was just not too much of a endeavor. Mm-hmm. And it was difficult in the beginning, but it's really gotten a hell of a lot easier now. They're very well managed.
I don't know how you do it. I mean, with all that you've done with the cause, Nina, you're such an inspiration. But I adopted a rescue cat. It's not even been a month yet. And, you know, cats are easy. There's a litter box and you feed them and basically, but she's clawing and I don't want to declaw her. So I clipped her nails and trying to teach her what's appropriate and not. And I don't know how successful I'm going to be, but I decided I'm going to stop talking about it. I'm actually going to do something about it. So we've got a four-legged friend in the family.
I have to tell you that when they're puppies, it's much, and you and I, our children are older, so it's been many years since we've had babies in the house, but it's much like having babies, and you sort of forget what you have to go through to get them to the point where they're self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
But in a matter, I mean, about 2 months ago, I was saying, oh, my God, what did I do?
Yes.
What did I open myself up to? And now that they've been spayed and they're calmer and their training is taking over, it's really become much easier.
Well, so good, and my hat's off to you. Because I know that I couldn't do it. I wouldn't be able to. And I always said I spent my patience on my children. So
that's a good one. And the amazing thing is that I have a friend, actually the woman who I found New Life Rescue from. Her name is Carol Room. She and her husband Hapster in their early 70s, and they foster multiple dogs at a time. They take in the mothers and puppies, and they can have up to like 14 animals in their house, including bunnies and cats and dogs and foster boarders and fosters. And you say you don't know how I do it. I don't know how they do it.
Actually, that's how I got my kitty. Is my girlfriend was fostering it because she was found in the alleys of Oxnard with 4 3-week-old babies. And so my girlfriend fostered her for the 5 weeks until the babies could become independent, which, of course, they were adopted right out. And then they microchipped and fixed my girl, and I took her in because I thought she's had such a rough life. She deserves to get some, you know, goodness in her life. But then she fostered a mother and 9 puppies at the same time. So she had a house full, too. So it's good for us that there's angels like you on the planet.
Exactly. And she must have not slept at all. And that's having, you know, we said 9 puppies and 4 kittens, that's 13 babies.
Exactly.
She was feeding around the clock.
Yes.
You're literally feeding them all around the clock. I mean, hats off to her.
Yeah, thank you. So let's talk about marijuana and dogs.
Okay. We did a bit of research on this. And before I talk about it, I just want to tell you that I have a live example of it. Another good Facebook friend of mine, Joyce Elise Nadell, who runs Rescue Me, Inc., which is a rescue and shelter for dogs that are seniors and ill, has a Pomeranian who has been very sick, critically sick. And last week she went and she ordered the cannabis oil. It's called Canine Companion. And I emailed her last night to say, I need a total update on what's going on. And she said that she absolutely sees a diminishment in the dog's pain and that the dog's appetite is coming back and she's starting to eat. She hadn't eaten in days.
I mean, administered the cannabis?
The cannabis is administered in an oil, and the dosage, and the most important thing is the dosing of it. Now, there is a doctor here in California, in Los Angeles. His name is Doug Kramer. He's known as the vet guru, and his formula is 1 drop of oil for every 10 pounds of dog.
And on their food or in their mouth?
It can be, they say to put it on a piece of cheese or a piece of bread. If I was doing it, I don't give my dogs cheese or bread, so they would get it on a piece of roast beef.
Mm-hmm.
So it's administered internally, orally, and there are 2 schools of thought. The 1 school of thought from many of the vets who are unfortunately seeing a lot of overdoses on dogs because of the carelessness of the owners, where the owners leave their stashes and the dogs get to it and get sick and hallucinate. And only 2 dogs in the Colorado system who did the study died because of it. This is not your type of let's light a joint, smoke it, and blow it in the dog's face and see how much smoke it takes to get the dog stoned.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the premise of this. This is to be used to alleviate pain, to induce appetite, and to help dogs who are ill in their later stages of life. Now, Dr. Kramer became involved in this when some of his patients started asking him about it, and he had a dog who was very, very old and very sick, and he said he was going to test it, and he started testing it with the oil, and he gave his dog an entire year of quality of life before he had to euthanize her.
So it's not necessarily a cure, but it's palliative in that it helps improve the quality of life and then actually may lengthen the quality of life because the symptoms are mitigated.
Exactly. It is definitely palliative care.
How nice. So do you know how long it's been in existence and or available?
It's been in existence for quite some time, and because of demand, it's become available in California, fortunately, where we have dispensaries. If you have a medical license to purchase marijuana, you can go in and you can purchase. It's called Canine Companion, and they sell it. I actually have a list of dispensaries that are dispensing it now. So if anybody's interested, they can contact me via the station. There's a particular woman who actually had a horse that was doing really awful, and it was barely walking. It had a major injury, and the woman decided to try using the cannabis oil, and within 48 hours, the dog was up on its feet and walking. And an interesting fact is that mammals have the same cannabinoid receptors as humans do and would benefit in the same ways. And the interesting thing is that the marijuana testing is done on dogs and monkeys for humans.
To begin with.
So if they're testing it on them, because they're so much like us, that's why, you know, they found that it is really helpful.
So here's the one thing, though, that it sounds like to me is that there's an opportunity for user error, not what the description that you gave of the dogs finding it and eating it, but it's up to the owner, as you mentioned, to dose properly and then to notice if you need to back off or stop or continue, mm-hmm. because apparently it's not being guided by their vets.
No, right now, you're correct on that. Right now, the only vet that is using it in his practice is this Dr. Kramer. But
does he prescribe it, or you still have to get it from a dispensary?
In my things, I believe he said he distribute. It's distributed at the dispensaries. I'll tell you need it, and then it's up to you to get to the dispensary to get it.
But you know what's interesting about this, Nina, is that you can get a marijuana card or whatever it's called here in California if you, the human, have physical ailments. I don't know that you can get it if you're wanting to get it for a pet.
No, that's exactly the point. You must have a human medical marijuana license in order to go and purchase this. However, you can purchase it online.
Oh, okay. So, is there a specific website, or you just Google Canine
Companion? Actually, I think you can go to Dr. Kramer's website, and he may dispense it on his line.
How does he spell his last name?
Kramer.
Okay.
A little different than yours.
Yeah, that's why I asked. So, yes. And also...
And it's VetGuru, GURU.com.
That's also his?
That's him,
okay.
Yes. Website.
Because the dispensary list that you mentioned, if our listeners would like that information, can I share your contact information on the website so that they can get right to you?
Absolutely.
And what would you like, either your email or your phone?
My
or
email.
What?
My email's fine.
Okay, so I'll put that up when we post the podcast. And then if somebody is from outside California, you suggest that they just Google the Canine Companion and find it that way?
Yes, exactly. Oh. And the things that they're saying that they're using it for is for pain and discomfort, that it provides relief from arthritis, strained muscles, and terminal conditions such as cancer, which is what it's used for in humans.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety and fear-based disorders, which is separation anxiety and neurotic conditions. Behavioral problems may help reduce aggressive or fearful responses.
Mm.
Epilepsy, which is neurological and neuromuscular disorders, increases appetite and decreases nausea, and it reduces physical wasting away and weight loss due to decreased appetite. Mm. Anti-inflammatory for IBD or for arthritis, and cancer, they say may contain tumor-fighting properties.
Do you know how much it costs?
I think the bottle was $39.
And that obviously will last, depending on how
a
large
long time.
The animal is.
You're only using a drop, but you're only using one drop, one drop per 10 pounds. So even if your dog is 100 pounds, that's 10 drops, you're still getting a full bottle. It should last for a decent amount of time. I mean, I can keep you updated on this because, as I said, Joy, my friend Joy is using it now, and we're going to keep a record of what's going on.
Excellent. That'll be great for a follow-up.
Exactly.
Thank you. Anything else?
Well, it was just saying that if something can really help your animal that's herbal rather than being medicinal, it's certainly worth giving it a shot.
I couldn't agree more. That's why I knew it was a perfect topic for you, because you're all about that.
Exactly.
So Nina Rubin, our pet correspondent, thank you for your time this morning. We will post the podcast with your contact information as well as vetguru.com. And have a great day and week. And hello to Mark, please.
Same here, dear. Take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye. So Nina visits with us when there are animal issues in the news, and the medical marijuana with canines, and as she mentioned too, with horses, was in the news. And so she speaks to that, as do all of our correspondents. Whenever their field of expertise is in the news, they come on and they kind of distill and disseminate it for us on the Maria Sanchez Show. Thank you so much for listening. Have a fabulous day, and we look forward to your ears tomorrow. Mañana.